News Report. This is Clark here. Hello, everybody.
Today it's my fault? Is that what you're saying?
Okay.
Well, yeah, he was just screaming in my ear, so I had to kind of start singing along with him. But, you know, he's a big fan of that song. He plays it in the car sometimes, so, you know, he definitely is a big Bon Jovi guy.
He was just okay. I've been waiting a long time for that. So you guys can package that someplace, okay?
Our view of what we've needed has changed as different players have stepped up and different players have developed over the year and different guys have jumped into roles and excelled, and then injuries influence matters as well and sort of shift your focus onto different areas of the roster. But certainly Alex Galchenyuk's rise to prominence on our roster, it altered a little bit of what we were looking for and really let us focus up front on the thing that I really felt that we needed from the beginning, which was to try to find a player that could play up and down our lineup that had tremendous character, competitiveness, defensive responsibility, but also had skill and ability to play with any of our top three lines. So that was accomplished with Nick.
James, it is a special edition of the podcast for two reasons. One reason is we get to talk about the trade deadline, which obviously only happens once a year. And another reason, we have the people's favorite guest, Chris Johnson from Hockey Night in Canada. Chris, how excited are you to talk about the trade deadline today?
I'm actually pretty pumped. Some years it's a little different than others in terms of my personal experience with it, but I enjoyed the last few days. And you know, I think this is going to be actually a pretty compelling playoffs we have ahead, maybe just with it being a little bit different. And I sort of feel that the trade deadline sets the scene and sets the stage for what comes next. And it's the best time of year.
This was kind of a weird trade deadline, wasn't it? Like, I wasn't expecting everything to start going down Friday and then Saturday and then Sunday. Like, kind of, it was kind of like a all weekend event as opposed to just the one day trade fest that we've kind of grown used to.
Yeah, it's getting funky. You know, I should look back at previous years. It feels like the last couple of years, we've gotten some trades on the Sunday, you know, right before the Monday deadline. And, you know, it's the ever-present debate, you know, the last few years that I've worked in television is, you know, how long should the show be? When should we go up? Should we do a Sunday show and a Monday show? And it's kind of a moving target. It'd obviously be easier if there was just a period where the trades were announced. But, you know, you're right. This was kind of a strange year because there's maybe only three or four sort of notable players or big name players, we might call them, you know, available, and they all went really before Monday. So, you know, I think that you know, once that happened, it kind of took some of maybe the sex appeal out of the deadline. But, you know, it's also a strange year for the GMs operating their teams and the cap and everything. And I think that had a pretty big impact as well.
So it was the end of the day and I was working on my story, looking at the trades, and I had TS on in the background on mute, and Bob McKenzie comes on at the end of the day to talk to Jay Onwright. And, you know, I know that's the other network, so maybe you don't want to talk about it, but Bob McKenzie comes on and one of the first things he says is the Maple Leafs didn't want Taylor Hall. Is that kind of your understanding of where they were at with Taylor Hall?
Yeah, I think the way... You know, I didn't hear what Bob said, but I'm sure you got it right there.
It was literally, that was the quote. Yeah.
There you go. I mean, I think the way I would sort of frame it, or the way I understand it, is that he certainly wasn't their first choice, you know, which isn't the same as saying that there was no set of circumstances where they wouldn't have traded for them, because maybe, you know, if they miss out on Nick Foligno, some other players go elsewhere. Yeah. I mean, maybe that sort of changes the plan, but it's, you know, it's pretty clear that they paid pretty much the highest price, you know, for a player at this deadline in the Foligno deal. And so, you know, that was the guy that they'd identified as their target. And, you know, I'm sure they could have got Taylor Hall for that price had they wanted him. So, you know, I certainly am not quibbling with the characterization, but I would say, guys, that, you know, to me, there were still potentially a set of circumstances, if we're going to game theory this through, that, you know, Taylor Hall still could have been Maple Leaf, you know, if certain players didn't fall their way, if Nick Foligno ends up going, you know, maybe wanted to play somewhere else. You know, there was probably, just because of the limited number of impactful forwards that moved, you know, that it could have happened that he was theirs. But, you know, ultimately there was no buyer that was aggressive as Kyle Dubas. He was willing to expend a significant amount of his draft capital from this year and next. He identified his targets and he went and got them. And so it's clear that Taylor Hall wasn't the top target for him at forward. I think that that was Nick Foligno basically all along, at least among the players that ended up being available and moving. And, you know, we'll see how that decision plays out.
I've had some complaints from Leafs fans just about the price that they paid, but it's kind of the laws of supply and demand. And there were a number of teams that wanted a forward, and there really weren't a lot of forwards. Once Palmieri went to the Islanders, you know, even someone like Janmark goes for a second and a third round pick to Vegas. And that's just because there weren't that many options. So, you know, if it wasn't going to be Foligno for the Leafs and they weren't sure about Hall, there's not really anyone else it really could have been. So I kind of understand why they ended up where they did in terms of the asking price.
Right. And this is the time to trade those draft picks. You know, I get that every fan, every person, you want to have it every possible way, but it just can't be that way. You have to go down a certain path, and, you know, where the Leafs are at in their development as a team, you know, I think this is the time. It makes all the sense in the world to make the best team possible under the constraints of the salary cap and the rules of the league. And so, yeah, if they could have traded for Nick Foligno straight up and they didn't need, you know, Columbus to keep half his salary and then, you know, the other half to be taken by San Jose, then it's probably just a first round pick for Nick Foligno. And let's face it, the Leafs pick is going to be anywhere from 25th to 31st. I mean, it's essentially a second round pick if you want to look at it that way. So, you know, I don't think the price should be that big a concern. There's obviously risk with a rental. I mean, Nick Foligno is going to play 10 games max regular season and then whatever the playoffs hold, which could be four. You know, I'm not predicting they get swept, but you're really acquiring him for a short amount of time and hoping that he can make an impact in that time. And, you know, but I think that there's also a huge price to doing nothing. And you know, look at the conversation, say, in Edmonton right now about, you know, a pretty quiet deadline for Ken Holland. I think when you have a team that you reasonably believe can win, and I remember Jonas wrote a nice story on this, the 5% championship rule, I think that you should be compelled to go all in and then you deal with the consequences next year.
Well, so I want to drill down, though. We can come back to that because I think it's interesting as well. But I want to drill down on the choice between Foligno and Hall. And obviously, they made the choice for Foligno. I think it's really fascinating because I can see what they were thinking with Nick Foligno. He can do some different things than what they've got. He can play on your first line. He can play on your second line, third line. He can kill penalties. He's good defensively. But there's obviously a higher upside with Taylor Hall. And I wonder, actually, I think it's pretty clear that the playoffs and how the playoffs went, especially last year, have shaped what they're thinking. Do you think they risk going too far in the direction, Chris, like where they've kind of overcompensated for what happened and not just kind of like maybe overthought it? Like Taylor Hall is a better player than Nick Foligno at this point, is he not? Like, do you know what I'm trying to say?
I know what you're trying to say, and I just think there's so much more to the game than offense and goals. And mm-hmm. at the end of the day, Taylor Hall gives you a lot offensively, but leaves something to be desired defensively. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think what the Leafs have essentially decided here is look, they saw how Tampa won the cup in the bubble with one dangerous forward line, like a ridiculously dangerous forward line, a highly productive top defenseman in Victor Hedman who won the Conn Smythe trophy, and then useful players who provided little or no to the little or no offense to the cause. And I think the Leafs are just, this is them going all in on their high-end forwards and recognizing that they're either going to win a Stanley Cup because Auston Matthews and Mitch Marner, William Nylander, John Tavares, that those guys play to their potential and perform or not. And so, you know, I think that the focus has been on building the best team around those players that can support them, that can not blow a lead for them, that can make sure that when they get up 3-0, as they did in a playoff game, an important one against Columbus, that they have players that can get that game into the barn and without any bad things happening. And, you know, that you're asking for saves in that situation, but I think you're asking also for a team that knows how to play defensively and is aware of the situations. And so, you know, when you look at the fit, I think Nick Foligno does more of that. You know, Boston is bringing in a Taylor Hall because they're not getting enough goals. And I know obviously they have a killer number one line, but they really got nothing else going on down their lineup. And, you know, I think the Leafs still have enough secondary scoring to get by, but it's going to be the big guys that get the job done or not, which is a lot to put on their shoulders, but that's kind of how it works. And so, you know, I understand how they got to that point. I also understand why fans, you know, love the idea of another first overall pick and someone with Taylor Hall's profile, and the fact he was just sitting there basically had for peanuts. You know, I can see, look, we're going to be looking back on this one way or the other, no matter how it works out. But, you know, I do think that filling a role and building, you know, this is where probably some of us have been misguided in looking at Kyle Dubas. I think it was thought for a long time he just wanted to build four crazy scoring lines with as much offensive talent as possible. And it's clear, at least to me now for some time, that he shifted or evolved or, you know, viewed the team differently. And you know, it's filling, it's kind of like the Lou Lamoriello thing about everyone's got to play an instrument in the orchestra. I think that he's looking to fill specific roles. And you know, obviously Nick Foligno is someone that can kill penalties for them. I think probably ends up on the third line is my guess. You know, I'm not saying he'll start there in the first game he plays, but I think that's where he'll settle and but can move up if they encounter injuries or they're looking to shake things up in a game or what have you. And, you know, just another trusted veteran that's been through it all and isn't gonna lose his mind when shit hits the fan in the playoffs, because yeah, you know, shit always hits the fan at some point in the playoffs.
But I guess I would just say, like, in looking at Tampa, I just pulled it up where you're talking, like, you're right. Like, in the playoffs, 5-on-5, Point had 10 goals, Palat had 8. Kucherov had 6, Hedman had 6, Coleman had 5, Gord had 5. But I think we saw
in 25 year, games, though, like
in 25 games. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I just think we saw last year, and you mentioned when we were texting about it, like the shooting percentage against Columbus was just like insanely low. I think it was 2%. But I think the conversation has to change a little bit with what's gone on this year. John Tavares is not the same contributor he was last year or the year before. And I just would be a little concerned that when it really dries up, where are they going to get offense from besides Marner and Matthews? And maybe the answer is simply Marner and Matthews. And obviously they need their power play to come along. But I just worry that, like, you might need a little extra juice over 4 playoff rounds. And I'm not totally sure they have it, and maybe they do, but I worry like that the Tavares thing is persists and that becomes a problem. Do you not see any of that, or do you think Foligno kind of compensates for other stuff and they maybe are just better overall?
You're raising a good point. Like, I'm not,
yeah, know, I know you're not, I know you're not black and white on this thing. Like, it's not, there, it's all gray, but I think it's interesting.
Well, I mean, they're one of the highest scoring teams in the league, right? I mean,
number one in expected goals and number two in total goals at 5-on-5.
In goals per game, even including the power play, struggling, a historic struggle right now. They're fifth in the league. They have 3.33 goals per game. I mean, I think adding Taylor Hall would be like, it's like adding another element that you've already got. Like, you kind of have that in the What Chris is saying makes sense. I mean, if Matthews and Marner don't score, you're not winning no matter what. So trying to build a contingency plan for that feels kind of...
But James, over like a 7-game series, like you can just... Those guys can just go cold. Like, it can just happen. We saw it that stretch where Matthews was hurt. So that's like... that's a big factor in that. But they weren't as dangerous offensively. Like, they had no other line that you looked at and said, man, that group is going. Now, I think the Alex Galchenyuk thing is interesting, that's kind of swung them a little bit. Like, how much do you believe in Alex Galchenyuk being enough in terms of like propping up, or not propping up, but like supporting, let's say, Tavares and Nylander?
Well, I think he's good enough to be their 6th best forward, which is really all they need. You know what I mean? Like, you know, they're not asking him to be the primary goal scorer for the team or to be driving even the possession on the line. You know, he just needs to be able to play with those players and contribute a little bit. And I think I've seen enough where I'm comfortable saying that he fits that role. You know, I think the problem with someone like Taylor Hall, and this isn't even specific to Taylor, but, you know, you have to make those guys feel good, right? You have to find him power play minutes. You have to find him opportunities to feel important, to, you know, because he is such an offensive player. Whereas I think, and again, that's not specific to him. I think any elite offensive player you bring in, that's what you're going to be doing. And I don't know if they necessarily have those minutes for him, unless they were going to put him with Marner and Matthews, for example. You know, whereas Nick Foligno, if he plays 12 minutes or he plays 18 minutes, I think he's giving you the same thing. I think that, you know, he's not measuring his worth or his contributions in the same way. You know, I just think he fits in a little nicer, and you don't have to, you're not asking Sheldon Keefe to pry open a spot that doesn't really exist for him to be a contributor. I also, you know, I still think very highly of William Nylander, and I know that this will be a debate that, you know, 10 years after Williams retired, that people are going to have a certain opinion of him. And I don't think it's going to change from what they think today to that point in time. But, you know, I think that, well, yes, you know, some things are drying up for John Tavares, although he's played a little better recently as we're recording this podcast and contributed a little bit more. You know, I think that Nylander is a bit of an X factor once he's out of his COVID protocol and back on that second line. And I still think there are very few teams league-wide that have a top six that truly matches the Leafs right now.
The other thing that I would say with Hall is you look at his comments after the trade to Boston, and he's a guy, you're going to have to rebuild his confidence. You don't really know what you're going to get in Taylor Hall right now. It's not like he's had a terrible season. He's been in Buffalo. He's had a terrible, probably, two and a half seasons? And, you know, he's a bit of a wild card right now. It's not like you're getting Hart Trophy Taylor Hall.
James, the counter to that is Nick Foligno is 33 and not, like, the idea of Nick Foligno, like, is he still that player? And I mean, you even look at their roster, like, they're getting, they're a little, and we talked about this with Elliot, and I'm sure you've talked about it with Elliot, CJ, they're a little older. Like, they're like, Riley Nash is 31, and I like the Riley Nash thing, and we should talk about that, but, like, I don't know, like, I think it's really interesting what they've done. Like, this almost resembles what teams kind of used to do, like, pre-salary cap, where you'd kind of get veterans to come in and, like, put you over the top.
But it's not an accident, right? I mean, literally, this whole thing is built around their top players, and their top players are young. And there's, you know, there's a case right now in my mind that Auston Matthews is the best player in the NHL. And, you know, Mitch Marner is not very far behind. He's very high on that list. And when you have William Nylander as your third best forward, all of a sudden your team, or fourth, depending on where you view Tavares. I mean, the point is I think that this is a calculated effort to build the best possible, you know, circumstances around those guys, and then a full recognition that you're only winning a cup if those guys perform at you know, best of the world kind of class. And you know, based on what we've seen this year, you know, Jonas, I know it's funny, you and I usually agree on things, but I've been disagreeing with you all year. Like, I don't think the North Division is nearly as poor compared to the others as is stated on social media. And I think you kind of hold that view a little bit. And I think what you've seen from the Leafs and the consistency from these guys is that they're ready to be at another level. And, you know, it's going to be fascinating, though, because you're right. It's a little bit old school, but they're not asking really that for much offense from the rest of the lineup. I think that they're looking for even minutes, you know, from the third and fourth line, especially. And, you know, they got to get that power play going before the playoffs to feel a little bit better about where they're at. But, you know, it's going to come down to how the Matthews line is defended, how they can play through those minutes, and if they can produce. And if they can, you know, I think the Leafs feel they've finally built the team around them. I mean, look, the Leafs defensively, it's night and day from last year. And I know that's less interesting to talk about and focus on, but it, you know, they're built now to win a 2-1 game, I think, more than they were in the past. And I think they play that style. And so, you know, that's where all these, whether it's Thornton, Simmons, Riley Nash, Zach Bogosian, you know, getting Nick Foligno. I mean, to me, there's a consistent pattern here where they've traded out some offensive players in Johnsson and Kapanen and built a more well-rounded team with some veterans that's going to be able to sort of keep the boat flat when the waters get choppy.
Well, I think, let's face it too, I mean, the Leafs, their forwards right now, the third and the fourth line are a problem. You know, they needed reinforcements there for sure. You know, and I really like the Riley Nash addition too, even if he's just going to be a fourth line guy that plays 9 or 10 minutes a game, and not just because he's from Kamloops. But
the Leafs Kamloops per 60 is a problem for me. But other than that,
well, they haven't had anyone, I don't think, since Eric Brewer. So it's been a while. I mean, Jared Smithson is from nearby, so that he's from Vernon, so it's pretty close. But you know, I'm excited. I'm going to have to write fawning Riley Nash articles, even when he's not playing, I think, at this point. So
This is the missing piece. Like, the Leafs lose a game down the stretch and say they just have to hold on until they get Riley Nash in the lineup.
He's coming, everybody. But I lost my train of thought now. I got caught up.
The bottom two lines?
Riley Nash as a Kamloops Jardine Blazer, 15 years old, playing on the under 18 team, and man, he was good. The bottom two lines are problematic. I mean, look at what you're getting from Thornton. Spezza has really slowed down. Pierre Engvall is not a natural center. Mikheyev has been really, really quiet offensively most of the year. Wayne Simmonds has slowed down after, that flurry early on. Kerfoot has not given them, I don't think, as much as we and they were probably thinking he was going to. I mean, there are concerns with almost everybody in the bottom six, aren't there?
You mean offensively or?
Well, I mean, just in terms, are you going to get enough? Like, is there going to be enough to beat, are they going to get a key goal? Are they going to get a key stop against the other team's top line? I don't know. Like, I don't have a lot of faith in what they've got right now in the bottom six.
That's fair, I suppose. I just think that they got a way deeper team than most of anyone they're going to go up against. I mean,
until it's conference final cup time.
But, there's a reason why, there's a couple of reasons, but one of the reasons why they're playing Matthews and Marner and Hyman so many minutes is they don't have enough faith in some of the guys further down the lineup. Like, it's not really balanced deployment, and it hasn't been all year.
Yeah, but it's working. I mean, do you have the minutes for the Tampa guys, Jonas, somewhere handy? I mean, I'm sure that they leaned on those guys. I think that's how they're going to win. I'm fascinated to see what this bottom six looks like. Like, I really don't know how this will shake out when everyone is healthy and the quarantine period, elapses. I mean, I don't think anyone takes joy in this observation, but, it seems that Joe Thornton's spot in the lineup is certainly in serious jeopardy once they have other options. I don't know how that will be managed because, to my knowledge, I don't think he's ever really scratched in San Jose. Might have went through that a little bit at the start of his career in Boston. I don't even have that off the top of my mind, but that it'll be a new experience for him if it gets to that.
Well, my understanding is Thornton resisted taking some days off in San Jose to rest. Like, that was something that he was openly against.
Right. I mean, and you get the feeling Sheldon keeps like trying to catch him doing something good. You know what I mean? He's still giving him opportunities. Yeah. And when it's 6-on-5 situation or power play, what have you. I mean, obviously they want him to be part of it, but it's hard to ignore the precipitous fall in his production since he's returned from injury this most recent time. And, the fact that I still think they have a lot of options there. I mean, maybe they won't encounter injuries, but if everyone's available, it's hard to make a case for him in their top 12 right now.
Well, when Foligno's ready to play and Nylander comes back, there's two that have to come out of the lineup. And then if you envision Riley Nash as someone who's going to be in the top 12, then there's three that have to come out. And you're going to be sitting some guys who have played the whole season for them.
Right. I would think Engvall's in danger there.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Maybe Wayne Simmonds. I don't know. That's what I mean. I don't have a full picture of how the puzzle pieces are going to fit. I sort of wonder with Riley Nash, does that free Kerfoot up maybe to be a top six winger again if they need? There's certainly more. There's more optionality, I guess, with this group of players than what they had before the deadline. Because, I think Galchenyuk is an option there. Obviously, Hyman, we've seen that he can be effective in that role. You might have Kerfoot, you might have Foligno. I think that there's a lot Sheldon Keefe can do. And it's important for a coach like him because he's obviously someone that likes to tinker and likes to try things. And, even in that five-game playoff series with Columbus last year, we saw him shuffle the deck chairs a lot. Now, some of that was resulting from the fact that things weren't going well. But, I do think I guess that's the one benefit is I don't think this is a team that's going to have a long playoff run and have four consistent lines. I mean, just the way Sheldon coaches alone, we're going to see a variety of different roles and uses of each player.
Well, and to your point, like before, CJ, like this is going to swing on the big guys. And like even in the Columbus series, Marner didn't have a great series. Nylander didn't have a great series. Tavares didn't have a great series. And so like maybe it's as simple as like Marner is better than he was last year. I think that's pretty clear. Nylander, like it's still a question mark what you'll get in the playoffs. I think until he proves otherwise. Tavares we talked about, but I do think they did a really good job, and I'd be curious what you guys think, of kind of preparing for everything. Like CJ, you were talking about, like they're very like versatile isn't the word I'm searching for, but they can kind of move in different shapes if they want to. Like they can create now like a defensive line if they wanted to with like Foligno, Nash, Mikheyev, or Hyman or whoever. They're kind of more versatile than they've ever been. And I'm sure you remember, Chris, like Mike Babcock used to get frustrated that they didn't have enough guys who could move over and play center. They just didn't have enough flexibility. And I think they've done a pretty good job of addressing that.
Yeah, I'll even go one further. Like I struggle to think of how the team next year can be better than this one unless, you know, one of the prospects that essentially isn't going to be playing now really emerges as an impactful player right away. You know, I think it's going to be difficult for them to line up the amount of, you know, below market contracts they have. Obviously, they've spent a lot of draft picks at this trade deadline, so they're not probably going to be as well equipped to do, you know, act similarly next year. And with all the unrestricted free agents they have, I mean, I think that they've done about as good a job as they can do. What's that?
Expansion will grab somebody too.
Yeah, expansion. And then everyone gets a year older. I mean, somebody that's probably playing well now might not be playing as well next year because of age. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they've done a nice job of really putting themselves in a position for success here. But man, the job, like Kyle Dubas can't put his feet up for too long. They're going to have to be beating the bushes trying to find useful players, you know, basically as long as they keep the top four being paid what they are and the cap doesn't go up.
I wonder if one of the lessons they could learn, this is a bit of a tangent, but I wonder if one of the lessons they could learn from this year is maybe when they're getting these bargain basement players, maybe try and go a little bit younger than they did in the offseason. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, maybe you're looking for more Galchenyuks than Thorntons, you know, next summer. That would be one way I think they could potentially, you know, improve is just have some better bargain buys than this year.
Makes sense. I mean, just there's so few of those guys. I mean, I guess you have to sell players on the idea of wanting to play here, and it's worked. You know, that was one of Mike Babcock's predictions that when the Leafs got good again, that whether it's Toronto area players or Ontario players would want to come here and would be willing to work with the team to make it work in the cap. And I think they're going to have to keep hoping for that. I mean, it sounds like Nick Foligno, for example, every reason to believe he's going straight back to Columbus, but you know, someone like him, although I guess he's still 33, it's hard because the younger players, you know, haven't made the money yet. And the Leafs just don't have a lot of money to compete that way. They have to offer, you know, a chance to win, you know, a city that loves a team, a marquee franchise. You know, they have to offer some other things to make up for it. But usually, I think this is going to be a factor in Zach Hyman's, you know, contract negotiation. I just don't know that the Leafs can pay him anywhere near what the market's going to pay him. And as much as he loves playing here and all the things, you know, I don't know from a business standpoint if he's going to be able to take as the less the Leafs are offering, for example. You know,
that's a sensitive subject on this podcast.
What's that?
Yeah, we debate that all the time. But we can get into that. That feels like a debate for another time.
Fair. I'm just saying that the same dynamic that exists in that decision for Zach Hyman exists for younger players. You know, coming here, I it's going to be harder to get a 25-year-old or 28-year-old playing for $1 million playing here that that's any good.
Yep. That makes sense. Chris, we're going to take a break here quickly. I got one more for you before we do. This is kind of dealer's choice. You want to talk about the other additions, Riddick or Ben Hutton? Who interests you?
CJ, that's too deep. Isn't that too deep in the weeds? Even for us?
Well, I mean, the goaltending. Okay, let's talk about the
goaltending. I think we need to talk about the goaltending. The goaltending is like...
Well, that's not deep in the weeds then. I mean, he's going to be playing. He could be playing tonight. So.
I think we should... Yeah, we're recording this on Tuesday morning. I think the bigger question, James, like beyond David Rittich, is the top of their goaltending. And I still think... And I was saying this to you last night. I still think like we need to consider the possibility of Frederik Andersen re-emerging or... something like I'm really curious to see how Jack Campbell will handle being the number one guy in the playoffs because obviously he's never done it before. There's nothing they could have done obviously beyond what they did, CJ, but like it's really interesting that their season in some ways kind of hinges on Campbell being ready for that, or Anderson emerging from like this brutal couple years to reassert himself?
Yeah, like I personally think we're going to see Frederik Anderson play playoff games, or a playoff game. Like I saw some people out there saying he's done as a Leaf. I don't buy that. I don't think we're going to see him now for the rest of the regular season based on the financial implications of the moves they've made. But, you know, certainly they haven't turned their back on him. They're not looking, you know, solely to the future. I think that Riddick is obviously insurance for them in this situation, because there's no guarantees Frederick's going to get back. You know, it's my understanding he's been dealing with a knee issue. Those are problematic for goalies with the amount of torque they put on their legs, with the positioning, the way they stand. And so, you know, I don't know. I think that partly explains why this has been a not straight line return for him, not just a, you know, 3 to 4 week return. And you know, I think that that's part of why this has been up in the air. It's just because part of it is just when he can feel comfortable. But, you know, I think the Leafs believe their best two goalies are Anderson and Campbell. And, you know, that they will probably have to play both of them in the playoffs. But, you know, should Freddie not be able to get back, or if he does get back and doesn't play well, if he's not in the right, if his body doesn't, you know, cooperate, you know, they've got, at least got David Riddick before you get to Michael Hutchinson. It is fascinating, though. I mean, as much as we talk about the team they built and all the planning they've done, and, you know, it could all be undone if they don't get saves. You know, that's the same for any team when it comes to playoff time. But there's far more of a degree of unpredictability with what they have in net than say, you know, what Tampa's dealing with Andre Vasilevsky, for example.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, we are back. James, it's your time to shine as always. Or is there anything else you want to touch on before we get to questions? Nash, I know you're excited about Ben Hutton.
Do you think Ben Hutton's going to play above Travis Dermott when everyone's up to full speed?
No. You?
I don't, but I don't know. And I haven't asked anyone, so I just was curious what you guys thought of that.
I think they'll mix Hutton in for some regular season games, and, you know, maybe Dermott sits a little. I think actually Dermott's played okay lately. I mean, he's had some of his better games on this stretch where the team's been good. So, I mean, why mess with something that's worked, right?
Right. I guess what it is Martin Marincin insurance. It's one more guy that plays before you have to call him Marincin.
Yeah, and Sandin hasn't played all year. And, you know, like, do you really trust Rosen or Liljegren? Or, I mean, Hutton's, you know, I asked a couple of people around the league what they thought of what the Leafs did. And a couple of responses I got back were, I really like what they did, but I don't like Hutton. I heard that from two or three people. So, but, you know, with the caveat that they didn't think Hutton was going to play that much. So, you know,
it is funny though that he's never played in the playoffs before.
Well, he's only been in the league 5 years, 6 years.
I know, but like you're thinking of him as like insurance in case you need him, and he would. That doesn't mean he can't play well. Like, it just is interesting.
Ron Hainsey hadn't played a playoff game till he played all of them with Pittsburgh.
Yeah,
that's true, but he had like 1,000 games.
Yeah, there's lots of guys. I mean, sometimes it's circumstantial.
Didn't like, Zach Bogosian wasn't last Zach year his Bogosian, first playoff year too?
Yes. Yeah. 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe he just means you want it more if you've never played in the playoffs. Maybe it doesn't mean that. Anyway.
And really, you're looking for a D to play like 12 minutes in that situation and just not get scored on. Like, just have presence to get the puck out of your zone and keep it simple and kill some penalties. You know, it can be pretty, as we know, playoff hockey isn't all beautiful, right? Like, Luke Shen played meaningful number of games for the Lightning last year and was just a physical guy who literally just flipped the puck out and fought a couple times, and it worked for them.
All right. There's a lot of really good questions. The first one's from Anthony Andrews. He wants to know, are there any interesting trades he heard about the Leafs potentially making that didn't materialize over the last few days?
Not really. You know, I do think that they basically got done what they wanted to get done. You know, I think they had some interest in Jamie Oleksiak, you know, as did a number of teams. As maybe that depth defenseman, but you know, ultimately Dallas decided not to move on from him with where they're at. And I think the desire to resign him. So, you know, the Leafs weren't one of the teams that I think was cooking up anything crazy that didn't happen. You know, I look more to, you know, for example, like the Ryan Getzlaf to Vegas stuff was real. You know, there was discussion there and I think some mutual interest in a fit. It didn't happen. Vegas has huge cap issues. You know, Anaheim wasn't going to trade him for nothing. It was just too complicated of a deal to pull off. But, you know, those are the ones I think are the more interesting kind of near misses just because, you know, like the Leafs, Vegas is a team trying to get over the top, trying to give themselves the best lineup of players heading into the playoffs where they have high expectations on their season. And, you know, they weren't able to do that. I think that they might still have a weakness down the middle, whereas the Leafs, you know, targeted depth at all three positions, managed to get the job done and, you know, managed to land Nick Foligno, who was, you know, one of the most prominent players available to them, you know, on the trade market.
Oleksiak would have been I really would have liked that move because I think, I mean, you look at the way he's playing right now, like he's playing basically on their top pair with Haskinen and playing against really tough competition. Like if they could swap out Dermott and put him in there or whatever, like then their defense is just like, man, they're really,
well, then they're sad. If you have an injury to the top four, you're not worried about it, right? Then you've got someone you feel like. That's one thing that I really feel like, you know, if Muzzin goes down again or Brody gets hurt or even Hall gets hurt, I'm all of a sudden the blue line makes me a little bit concerned. And the D is not very battle tested in the sense that they haven't had any injuries. I mean, it's been really, unlike last season, it's been very smooth sailing for them in health wise. So,
yeah,
that would be a concern for me. If you all of a sudden you start shaking up the pairings and you move guys to their offside or whatever, then you don't want to be doing that for the first time in the playoffs.
But I guess in this case, since the guy didn't move, I mean,
yeah,
what can you do?
You didn't have the second team playing tango.
I kind of liked Kulikov, and he went for a little bit more than Hutton, and I think can play a little bit higher in the lineup. I don't know if the Leafs ever looked at Kulikov or not, but I just think that he's a better fit for the top four if you need him to be. All right, Kyle Barker would like to put Chris on the hot spot.
Yes.
He says, with the acquisitions of Nash and Foligno, who do you see coming out of the lineup to accommodate them? So you got to move three. You got to sit three guys.
Okay.
Well, because Nylander's coming too.
I think Joe Thornton's out of that lineup. Although keep in mind, like Nash doesn't play till the playoffs. That's maybe the X factor with him is he's injured.
Yeah.
And they might not insert him right away, depending on how things are going for the team. But if we take the players they have on their roster and their top 12 forwards right now, I think Engvall comes out. I think Thornton comes out.
Ooh. Then it's going to be Simmons or Spezza probably, right?
Yeah. And if
no, I think you guys have it wrong. I think you've got it wrong. Like, I think CJ's right. Like, these are the top 12 forwards that I have right now. Hyman, Matthews, Marner, Nylander, Tavares, Foligno, Galchenyuk, Kerfoot, Spezza, Mikheyev, Nash, Simmons. And then coming out, conceivably, Thornton, Engvall, Robertson.
Oh, yeah, Robertson. Right.
Right. Robertson's a factor, yeah.
Yeah.
But I think CJ's right. Like, I think, obviously, so much can change. Like, injuries can change. Performance can change. But right now, and, like, we were in agreement when they signed Joe Thornton that, like, there's no risk. 700 grand, good guy to have around. But the risk, always, when you sign a 41-year-old is, like, he might just be done. Like, there's going to be a point where you don't see it, and it's just over. And it might be there, as uncomfortable as it is with Thornton. And that's, I mean, I think he'll be okay with that, but, like, who knows?
Yeah. It's like, I know this is our job, but, like, you almost don't want to look in that direction. Like, I don't even,
yeah.
Like, I don't want to start asking those questions of people, or, you know, there's no joy in seeing, no, like, someone who's had this kind of career. You know, if this, I'm not saying it's the end, who knows? Like, he also had, like, that rib injury, from what I understand, is very painful. You know, maybe some time out of the lineup. And then because, you know, I don't think he'll be out and just not play for 30 games. Like, I think you're going to see more of a rotation with the way that everything works now, you know, not to mention the possibility, the heightened possibility of injuries in the playoffs. It's hard to make a case for him in their top 12 with these additions.
they've got a lot more roster flexibility just on the cap than they've had all year, where they can, they'll be able to mix and match and sit guys. And that's something that Sheldon Keefe has complained about at times, is that they didn't really have any of that flexibility. So, you know, maybe they can justify giving some guys a break.
Yeah, maybe we'll finally get some load management down the stretch. I mean,
it looks
like they're going to win the division just out of course at this point. You know, as long as that remains the case and they have first locked up, I mean, I think in these last few weeks of the season, you should just give some of the veterans some time off. You know, I don't think they'll do it with someone like Matthews, you know, who's got a, you know, the goal scoring race and all that stuff. But, you know, certainly the older players, it makes sense to me to just give them some scheduled nights off.
Rusty wants to know, Dubas' signings and trades this season look more truculent, and they're what Babs always wanted. Is he shifting his beliefs? Is Shanahan asking him to? What does this mean for Babs' future if the Leafs do well? I guess the inference there is that this is the kind of team that he wanted to coach in Toronto. What do we think of that?
Tough to say. You know, I don't know if Mike had any issues with the lack of truculence necessarily. You know, obviously certain players that Kyle acquired, he wasn't wild about playing. I think of like Nick Batan when he first came over in a trade, or you know, the Spezza thing. We don't have to.
Well, the Justin Hall one's probably the most damning one, right? I mean, look how well he's played.
Right. I mean, this is a difficult conversation because part of the discussion around Mike Babcock has nothing to do with roster construction or who he got along with and who he didn't get along with in the Leafs front office. I mean,
no, yeah.
Part of it is some of the things that have come out about his coaching methods that aren't in line with the way society, you know, deems acceptable behavior. And I can't tell you how other teams are going to view that. It only takes one other GM to want to hire him. I think he's going to work again in the NHL personally. And I don't think it matters what the Leafs do or don't do or what the lineup looks like. You know, I think that his resume will get him another job. I think he clearly has a desire to get back in the game. You know, he interviewed with Washington, you know, last summer and, you know, didn't ultimately get that job, but, you know, once he's out of his Leafs contract and can go work for any amount of money that he deems fit, you know, I think he's going to be back behind an NHL bench. And I don't think that what happened in Toronto is going to impact that negatively or positively for a lot of old school GMs out there.
All right. Boy, there's a lot of questions about who the forwards are going to be in the lineup and who's going to be out. I would say that's probably half the questions we got this time. All right. Rob Tripp asks, if they're in position to do so, should the Leafs try and go all in trying to chase for the President's Trophy or rest key players down the stretch? It's interesting because the way that they're doing the seedings when you get out of your own division is it matters whether you won the President's Trophy or not in terms of who you're going to face. So maybe it has more value than in previous years?
I think it has value. You know, if you win the President's Trophy, you're going to face the worst team in the conference finals should you get there.
Yeah.
The worst remaining team. Now, that might be the fourth overall team, so it doesn't mean you're facing a weak team necessarily. But, you know, I think
it could be some Cinderella team, right, that's on fumes that somehow locked into that spot.
Right. I mean, I do think that they should have that as a goal, especially because we're at this late stage of the season and they're in the mix. I wouldn't say they're the favorite, but they certainly have a shot at it. You know, the other interesting thing is, and I don't know where this stands, you know, I never actually got a chance to report it on TV yet, but I know as of a week ago, the league had recently started to think that there might be a window to play the Canadian playoff games in Canada in the third round. You know, that's not decided upon, but it hadn't been ruled out as of a week ago, and I haven't checked up on it with the deadline, everything going on, but you know, the idea of playing at home, even if there aren't fans, you know, more often than not, because if that happens and they're playing an American team in the third round, you know, which is where the only place really where the President's Trophy conversation is relevant is if they get to the third round. You know, I do think that you wouldn't necessarily want to be playing in other cities where there could be fans as much. You know, I don't know. I don't really know what with home ice advantage is going to have any real value in this playoff setup. It's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard to project that, but you know, I do think if we're just operating on sort of first principles that, you know, it's best to finish as high as you can. And the Leafs have a chance to be first overall in the league in the regular season. I think that there's some value to that. It's obviously affected by the weird schedule that every team's facing. So someone's going to place an asterisk on it, no matter who wins it. But you got a chance to do it, I think that they should set it as a goal and try to get it done.
Well, that gets me thinking, because obviously I think that's what they'll try to do. Like, I don't think they'll try to take their foot off the gas, especially with what's happened in past years where they've kind of like sputtered into the playoffs. Mm-hmm. But one of the interesting things to me is like the Matthews thing, and you touched on it before, Chris. And James and I have talked about it. You and I have talked about it. And I think it's going to be really interesting, especially if he continues to produce like this, which I think he will. And especially if he continues to play as he has defensively. What do you think it'll take for him to push aside Connor McDavid and win the MVP? Or do you think it's like McDavid's just going to have too many points, Edmondson's going to get into the playoffs, and that'll be it?
I don't think it's done by any stretch. You know, I think he's narrowed the gap here the last little bit. You know, I think he's a 9-goal lead as we're recording the podcast. You know, if he wins the goal title by 9 or 10 goals in a shortened season, has the kind of defensive impacts he's had, the Leafs win the division, maybe win the President's Trophy. You know, all those things are possible, and I do think it shifts how you view it. Now, you know, the thing that both he and McDavid have to contend with is McDavid plays with Draisaitl, Matthews plays with Marner. Matthews and Marner play more than 5-on-5 minutes together than the Edmonton guys do this season. And so I don't know how the voters will view that kind of when it comes to the race. But, you know, it's hands down, if you're voting today, I think Austin Matthews is going to be top three in the Hart Trophy vote. And I still think he has a chance to win it. He wouldn't be the favorite. You know, Connor's earned that with the season he's had too. But, you know, there's still 15 games left or what have you. I mean, it's still enough time for one guy to get super hot and the other to get cold, and for this to look different by the time those ballots are due. So, you know, I think he's in that mix, certainly more than he has been in the past.
They've changed the voting this year. It hasn't gotten a lot of publicity, but there's going to be a lot fewer voters who are based in Toronto than there have been in years past. So I don't know how that'll impact things, but they tried to balance it out with the way the divisions are and have a lot of more, you know, American voters.
James, you're talking to one of the bosses. Like, CJ is
I know he's the one
up in the PHW.
He's the one that decided that you and I don't get to vote this year.
Oh, that was an unpleasant process.
That's not funny.
I mean, basically what we have, the thinking was, is that even the most responsible voter this year, let's face it, isn't watching the whole league. Because, you know, if you're a beat writer for any of the teams, those teams are only playing within their own division. And so that we were in danger, not just in the North, not respective just to, you know, Matthews versus McDavid for the Hart, but in any case, you know, it's just been a hard season to truly consider the whole league against itself. And so, you know, we wanted to get to a number that was manageable from each division. And so there's 20 voters per division, and then 20 at-large voters additionally for a total pool of 100 voters. And in a division like the North Division, where, you know, there's more, we have far more members in the Professional Hockey Writers Association based in Canada, you know, a lot of very eligible voters, you know, people that have voted on the awards every year for 10 or 15 or 20 years got left off. Some of them were pretty upset. Had a few emails with F-bomb.
No.
The one thing I will say, Chris, is that having fewer voters might potentially, some of the more outlier decisions are going to have a higher impact. So that's one of the things that's one of my predictions of what you'll see happen as a result of that.
And that worries me. You know, I've always been personally in favor, you know, when I've had these discussions as part of, I'm the vice president right now at the PHWA, when we have internal discussions, one thing I've been consistent on is I think in a lot of ways, a larger voter pool is better. I'll give you an example. You know, when I first came around, when I first started covering the Stanley Cup final, I believe there was 9 voters on the Conn Smythe every year. There'd be three that covered each team for the whole season. So, you know, the local beat writers, for example, and then 3 national writers or you know, that have been around covering the playoffs. And I kind of was pushing to say, like, I'm not calling anyone into question with that. I actually believe in the integrity of the people that would be even in consideration to be that 9, but I just think it's too small of a group that it could be manipulated. And again, I'm not implicating anyone, and I have no reason to believe that happened for any Conn Smythe vote before my time, but I just thought it was too dangerous. And so, you know, I don't have the number in front of me. It's published though publicly. I think we had 17 voters for this most recent Stanley Cup final. And I think that that's a little more realistic. You still have three that have covered each of the teams throughout the season, but you have far more sort of neutral parties or people that, you know, have watched the whole playoffs and covered the games in person is largely one of the things that allows in the past that's dictated who gets those votes. And I just feel more comfortable with that because then you're allowing some noise to get weeded out, I guess. And so, you know, hopefully we don't look back on this decision poorly. I believe in our voters, and I believe honestly, more often than not, it's not the player. You know, last year, for example, I had Artemi Panarin number one on my Hart Trophy ballot, but you know, I don't think it's some shame that Leon Draisaitl won just because it wasn't the person I had number one. You know, I think it's an easily defendable choice from the membership at large. And so I just hope we come out of this year with that same kind of consensus where, yeah, maybe the players I pick number one don't win each award, but that we get it right.
Okay. Speaking of your picks, Chris, Suki wants to know, are the Montreal Canadiens still juggernauts or was that fake news?
Oh my God. Never tweet is the lesson here. Because at the time, I think it was February 2nd. At the time I was watching a game, the Habs were playing, they had a great start. And I wasn't like, it's funny. Like people think I'm trying to jinx them or.
How many Mondavis in were you?
No, I don't even think any, honestly. I just, man, I'm pretty boring in pandemic. Like I don't really get up to too much. So like these fans have not let me forget that tweet and rightfully so. Look, this is all fun and games, but I really believe the Montreal Canadiens at that point looked like juggernauts. They immediately went into a tailspin after I tweeted that. Claude Julien gets fired. The Leafs get hot. So then so you get two things happening. Whenever the Habs were losing, which was a lot in that period in February, that tweet was getting sent back to me and brought back into my timeline. And then whenever the Leafs were winning, which was a lot in February, all the Leafs fans were like, well, are the Leafs juggernauts? You said this about the Habs. You haven't said anything about the Leafs. So they complete the three-game series in Edmonton. And I don't know what their record was, but it was very good. That was the best at that point they played by far all season. And so I said, you've all been asking. Yeah, the Leafs look like juggernauts. And then the Leafs went on a losing streak. So I've tried to avoid using that word again in any tweet because I'm certainly not trying to jinx anyone. And, you know, there's been other teams around the league that have looked like juggernauts, but they'll go unnamed because I don't want anyone to think I'm influencing the results here.
Colorado. Vegas.
Carolina. Florida. This is probably a decent spot to talk a little bit about the Canada division in that debate, because Jonas and I have been having that this year too. And I'm more on your side, Chris, where I think that the teams are going to, you know, it feels like almost people are thinking that, you know, I think the Leafs are going to be the favorites, but I don't think they're going to be as heavy of a favorite in that division in the playoffs as some people are thinking.
No, I think Montreal's going to give them some trouble, honestly.
Yeah.
The way the Canadians are built.
I like the way Winnipeg plays. Like, there's going to be a challenge there for them here.
And it's the playoffs. Like, it should be that. You know, Tampa, like, even the Tampa's Columbus series was close. Like, it was five games, but they played, like, 100 overtimes in that series. Like, the whole series was close. Like, I know then they still have to go on and they have to beat Boston and the Islanders and Dallas to win the Cup. But it's – the playoffs are hard. And – you know, I actually think Montreal-Toronto will be a really, really, really difficult series for the Leafs. I think the way that Montreal is built on the back end, big physical defensemen, you know, the Leafs like to set up shop, obviously, in the offensive zone, kind of slow the game down and control the puck. Well, when you slow it down with Montreal's defensemen, that works in their favor. And they're going to get Ben Chiarot back here soon, too, who fits into this mold. You know, Shea Weber, obviously. Edmondson. You know, they have players that sort of physically punish you when you're in their zone, and they do a really good job, if you look at the numbers, of taking away the middle of the ice. And so they effectively can neutralize what the Leafs do a little bit. And I think that if they get goaltending, and, you know, Jake Allen's given them pretty good goaltending, you know, I know it hasn't been a great season for Carey Price. You know, I could just see that being a lot of close games and it being hard for them. You know, maybe in the way that the Leafs made it hard all the way back when against Washington, right? That series was really close, even though Washington was clearly a better team and ultimately got through it. You know, there's there's some, it's going to be tough. And I think that's why someone like Foligno makes sense over Hald again, too. I think he's a player that's going to grind through that kind of series a little bit better. You know, I know that Jonas is worried about the goals and all that stuff, but I just think that the Leafs need to be committed to playing a certain way if they play that sort of team. And then you're right, Winnipeg is also difficult for them if they end up facing them in round two. Probably the team the Leafs would have, I wouldn't say the easiest time with, but I think that it's a more comfortable series for them is Edmonton, just because they play similar ways and they've had a lot of success against them this year.
Well, let me just be clear. I think the Foligno addition makes sense, but I'm not as like, I think I need to see it before I'm like, I guess I'm not as gung-ho as maybe most people, but I see the value and I see the point and I think it's interesting. Anyway, we're out of time. Chris, you're the people's number one favorite guest. So thank you as always for coming on with us and nerding it out.
It's funny because I hate when I'm on because that means I can't listen to the episode because I'm also a listener of this podcast. So
you can still listen to it.
No, I don't watch myself on TV. I don't listen to myself on radio or podcasts. I can't do it.
Do you at least look at your hair on TV? Because it looked pretty glorious lately.
Oh, man, that's the pandemic. It's not a style choice.
No, but I actually think it looks good.
Okay. I thought you're funny because like Ray Ferraro was texting me the other day, like chirping me about it. So
you got a little bit of flow in there. It looks my old man said it looked like he had a hair transplant, which I know is not true, but that's what my dad said.
The hair is playing to mixed reviews online right now. So I thought you were just giving me the gears about it.
Well, it looks better than what I got, a big mullet going on. So I'm glad I'm not on TV right now.
I haven't had a haircut since November though. So yeah. I trimmed the wings myself on the side a little bit, but I mean, because obviously in downtown Toronto where I live, unfortunately for the people in that industry, all the barbers have been closed, and you know, Sportsnet requested that we not get any black market haircuts, that we want to be a leader in the community. And so Elliot Friedman and I are following along, and Elliot's getting a lot of chirps about his flow too.
James, any other thoughts? Do you want to take us out?
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
It's been a long couple of days. Thanks for coming on, Chris. It was awesome. Thanks to everyone for listening. If you're not subscribed, theathletic.com/LeafReport. Buy your manscapers and you can trim your wings too.
And if you're not subscribed, what are you thinking? Get on that.
Nice, CJ. Nice. Thanks, boys.